It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Welcome to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, serving Mobile since 1939, Alabama Pipe and Supply, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
The old Ed's Seafood Shed and the new
or future new.
I can't even get a word in as to whether or not it's going to be called Ed's again, but I do know that there will be some good changes made. I'm looking forward to it. But
regardless of what they call it, you know it's going to be good vittles.
I hadn't missed a lick, though, baby. Squid ink and Panini Pete's in Fairhope, and then in the Sunset Points over at the little yacht basin over there. Mm-hmm. I believe they call it Fly Creek.
Fine. Good food.
Vittles. Good food. What you talking about? Yes.
Yeah. Well, I suppose everybody survived our Mobile winter. You know, I guess it's, I don't know if it's over yet or not. I think we're supposed to get cold again this weekend, but I think it's just waiting for the weekends and just keeping
us
cold.
It just wants to screw up our weekend. That's all the hell it's doing.
Yeah, yeah. During the week, except for, I don't know, we had a wet one last time around, but this past weekend got a little chilly,
I think it's just trying to keep people in over the weekend.
It could be. Yeah. It could be.
If we're going back into our pandemic mode,
yeah,
you're quarantined for the weekend due to the weather.
Yeah, you know, Friday night was a little chilly, but it warmed up over the weekend. We had a pretty nice weekend, so it's all good.
It's all good.
We hadn't seen anything frozen. Didn't get anywhere near that cold. So we've had a few, coolant leaks and batteries died.
Well, that's what I was wondering. How did the battery deal work in these last couple of spells? What did you see with that?
You know, we had our typical, couple batteries a day, going out. And that's not a couple more than normal. You know, we usually see a battery a day or so. But, during this cold snap, you're gonna get some cars that the batteries die.
You're gonna have two or three then.
Yeah. It's not unusual at all. But what did surprise me, I know Friday was pretty cold, and we had a couple cars brought in for the air conditioner not cooling. It was like, how am I supposed to know?
Well, bet you got one of them thermometers there that you can put in the duct.
You can, but if it's already 30 degrees out, it's
I got to warm up the thermometer so it will work.
it ain't going to tell me a whole lot. So, and you look at pressures and that, and luckily, if it's got a leak, we can fix it and put the correct amount in, and it should be right.
That's one of the advantages that you have today that we didn't have 25, 30 years ago.
Right.
If that sucker wasn't cold, we'd put another can in it,
Put another can of
that R12 in there.
You had the R12. Of course.
And I've seen them most blow of us knew the lines how much, off of it.
Oh, yeah. Most of us knew how much to put in. If it was a 4-pound system or a 3-pound system, whatever, you knew, how many cans to put in it. And you would be pretty well right on when everything warmed up. But you just kind of had to guesstimate on the pressures. Yeah. Assume it was doing what it was supposed to be doing, but you can get pretty close on that stuff now, because the temperature doesn't change the weight of the refrigerant, so you can still put in the correct amount and be good once everything warms up. But we've had really a surprising low amount of heater problems. No real issues there.
Can I call in? I got a question for you.
Sure.
let me dial in. Car Doctor, I got this Lincoln Town Car that I've just purchased here, and when I first crank it up in the mornings, if my radio is not on and drowning it out, I can hear gurgling in my heater core. Now, I thought, once I get cranking and running here, it'll get a little temperature in it, that will actually go away. But I have now determined that I have it in there constantly.
Yeah.
Even, you know, drive it all day long and it'll still be in there. And I've just been trying to determine what the heck would be causing that. I mean, does it sound like it's a little blockage in the heater core? Or there's, I understand that Lincoln might have some kind of valve in line.
You know? Right. You know, usually when you have a gurgling sound, it's an indication of air in the system.
Right. That's where I was going.
And that's typically what's going to be the problem. The heater core is typically one of the higher points of the cooling system. So it's the first thing to.
Is that where it's going to accumulate some air in there then?
Yeah, it's going to, you know, of course, air is going to try and come to the top. So it tries to get flushed through there as the motor's running. But if you got air bubbles running through that cooling system at all, it's going to go to the heater core and it's going to make noise, you know, because okay. It's inside the car.
All right. Yeah. Back in the day. Then in the day, I would leave the radiator cap off with pressure cap and crank it up and let it warm up.
Mm-hmm.
And if any bubbles or any air was in there, it would bubble back through the system.
Right.
Now, since we have an overflow,
mm-hmm.
And that's something I'm going to have to go out and check when we get off the air, see if there's a pressurized cap on the overflow.
Right, right.
But I was just wondering, if it does, if it has one there, then that needs to be removed and let the car build its temperature up and let the air come out of the coolant.
And, you know, typically, if the cooling system is working the way it's supposed to be, you have your pressure tank, which some of them are made to the radiator, some of them are a separate pressure tank.
Right.
And then typically you have an overflow, which could be part of the reservoir, could be part, you know, a separate unit, whatever. If everything's working the way it's supposed to be, the pressure cap will hold pressure on the system. It heats up, and it'll kind of push some cooling out or whatever, or air out as it runs.
Well, water's going to expand from heat.
The water and the air, especially the air if it's got air.
Okay,
it's going to expand. All right, it's going to push it into the
overflow.
Overflow, and as it cools down, if you have water in your overflow, it should suck it back into the cooling system. Okay,
not air,
and it purges itself at that point.
Right.
It may take a few cycles to get all the air out of it, but there are other ways to get air out. They do make a vacuum fill system where you actually pull a vacuum on the cooling system in the car and then put the coolant in, which works well. There's, you know, other issues that could be part of it as well for the noise. I've seen some cars have a step-down orifice in the heater hose, and it'll get a little piece of trash around it, and it's actually speeding up the flow too much going in the core. It's reducing the flow, but it's making it go faster on the entry part, and it causes the noise.
So it would be pressurizing the heater core then.
It doesn't really pressurize it anymore, but it changes the flow enough to where it creates a noise. You know, we've had a few do that. Some of our cars actually had a screen that would filter the water going into the heater core, and the filter would get stopped up.
Ooh, okay.
And start to make a rushing sound going through that screen. Just a couple things to look for. Usually it's going to be an air pocket. Just we'll have to look and see if it is.
Let me ask you another question. Back in the day, our radiators had orifices or little drain valves on the bottom of the radiators.
Little petcock.
Yeah, we don't see that anymore.
Not on a lot of them, but there's still quite a few that do have it. You know, the serviceability of the cooling systems has changed a little bit because they've extended the life of the cooling system so far.
That little town car I had was an 04.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all the records on it, and the coolant had never been changed in it.
Right, right. Well, typically they're looking
18 years.
Yeah, they're looking 150,000 miles on service on the coolant.
You know, I only had 120 on it when I got rid of it.
Right, so it's a viable thing that, you know, some people never change the fluid and the coolant in their cooling system. You know, but the maintenances have changed a lot over the years. We don't have near the fluids and maintenance parts to change
as we did
at one time. They've really worked hard towards lowering the maintenance cost of the vehicles. Now, I'm going to say not necessarily lower the maintenance cost because everything's gone up.
Oh yeah,
but
the overall
the pieces
cost,
that you have to go buy, yeah,
right?
You know, spark plugs and wires, shiver caps and rotors and all that kind of stuff. You don't have to do anymore. But anyway, it sounds like it's time for us to take a break, and we're going to let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
Roll on highway, roll on along.
It's the Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit.
Yeah, and welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. Any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. But we're getting off into some maintenance there this evening, but you know, it's when we get into some of the electric vehicles, there's going to be a whole bunch of different maintenance issues gone away, you know, because I can see brakes going a long time because you're going to be using regenerative braking for a lot of it.
You might be able to get by with brakes for, you know, maybe 100,000 miles.
I mean, easily. You know, there is a cooling system for the battery and charging system on them, but, you know, they don't require a whole lot of maintenance.
Would that system have cooling in it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it does have cooling in it,
you wouldn't want that system to freeze either, even though you don't have a gas burner.
No. But, you know, and really, you really don't see a problem with them. You know, they don't tend to leak. Of course, anything can leak, but you know, they're very particular about the coolant that runs through the battery, you know, system. You don't want coolant running around in there.
Nope.
You know, so they're very particular about how that's sealed up. But it's got a radiator and a electric pump and fans and all, just like any other cooling system.
You know? Well, you know, you're talking about that and the longevity of some of the things that we used to have to maintain regularly every 25,000-30,000 miles, mm-hmm. like the old V belts that we had back in the day.
Right.
Now we have serpentine belts, mm-hmm. and when they first came out with them, they were junk. But as they progressed over the years with them and changed mm-hmm. a lot of the structural building of it and the materials that they were using, I mean, those things are good for 50,000-70,000 miles. I don't think I had to change mine. Yeah. Until it was in the 80s, and I didn't change it because there's something wrong with the belt. The darn pulley started squealing.
Right. You know, it's not unusual to see 100, 150,000 miles on a belt now. You know, they don't fail. You know, they don't get cracks in them. You know, they don't, as long as you keep the oil off of them.
Well, that's where I was going.
Stuff,
yeah.
We don't have the
water leaks now in those vehicles, and we don't have the oil leaks that we had. So we're not getting all these contaminants on that would destroy the structural soundness of the belts.
Right.
You know, like back in the day, an old car's going to leak some oil.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a front seal that's going to have a little bit of leak in it, and the water pump's going to have a little seal leakage around that. So you're going to have water, and you got oil, and et cetera, et cetera. And the stuff just didn't last.
Right. But, you know, even when everything went right, the serpentine belts, they would get cracks in the grooves.
Right, right.
You know, running across them, and we don't even see that anymore.
Well, you know, I think that had to do with the fact that rubbers, and we've talked about it, just like rubber on the tires, mm-hmm. it never stops curing.
Right.
Because there's a curing process to make that. But I think with the refinement that they've had, been able to get under the control of how that belt is mm-hmm. The rubber is generated in there and the heat factor that goes to it and the chemicals that they're using to make it, they have perfected that to such an extent
right.
that, you know, all that work. But, you know, here it goes. It's like race cars. Back in the day, we knew the motor was all right when we cranked it up and ran it for a little while or made, you know, made a couple of passes with it or whatever. Well, now they got dynos now.
Right.
Well, you know, and the factories have got these dynos, and they make a change. They put it on there, and they run it till it breaks to see and see what broke.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
But valve springs. Look at the machines they got for valve springs.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have valve spring problems.
Right.
And you know, we don't have that. We used to have mm-hmm. valve problems.
Yep.
But then we don't have that. They changed the regular metal to Sterilite,
yep.
which is that hardened deal, which we used to do that in a machine shop, and you're still mm-hmm. confronted with it on older vehicles.
Yeah.
But you change those seats to Sterilite, and you couldn't beat them out of there.
Right. You know, it's I mean, if you just go back to like the NASCAR racing stuff, you know, back in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s, there was always a huge attrition rate during those races
sure.
because the
yeah.
motors would break. Rear end
oh,
break,
yeah, you'd see a motor pop.
Up.
They're telling yeah. you see one now.
They just don't hardly break.
No.
If you see a motor break, there's probably not, I'd be willing to bet over 40 cars doing 36 races, there's probably 10 motors.
And they won't know, be that many, Kev.
If that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's over everybody, yeah.
But, you know, what's neat with that, and it goes back to what I was, you know, I was elaborating on there a while ago, is the we have these automated machines now, the dynos, and, you know, they're going to put that motor on the dyno and run it
mm-hmm.
for an extended amount of hours and race it through many different RPM settings and all to
right.
make sure that it's right before they lease it to the guy that's going to lease it for the
yeah.
for a race, you know?
Exactly. Well, you know, and we've gone to the extreme. A few years back, it wasn't unusual for a cup car to make almost 900 horsepower.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And they turn it 10,000,
oh, yeah.
11,000
yeah.
RPMs.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Which we said that you could never do that with a pushrod motor.
Yeah, they said you couldn't do it. Okay,
right.
Well, they proved us wrong. They could do it.
Well, they said we couldn't
turn
it. And
they still wasn't breaking.
Yeah, but, and they said we couldn't turn that Pinto with a timing belt on it 9,000 RPMs
right.
either.
Right, and you turn it on a regular basis. Yeah, but anyway, you know, they've actually backed down the horsepower to the 600
right.
horsepower range.
They're going back to longevity.
And bringing the RPMs back down
mm-hmm.
below 9,000 anyway.
Right.
And, you know, you take a motor that was able to make 900 horsepower and run at 11,000 RPMs back down to 9,000 RPMs and 600 horsepower, they don't break.
They don't break.
Yeah.
They don't fatigue. You don't fatigue anything that way.
Right. You know, and we're doing the same thing on the round track out here.
Well,
you know?
So you're doing the same yeah. thing. But then, you know, the factory's done the same thing with our cars. I mean, you know, the tachometer on my car, if I get over 2,000 RPMs, I'm going like, what's going on? What? I
right.
start looking to see how fast I'm running.
Right.
What am I doing
right.
with my foot? Because,
yeah.
you know, I know my car will run at 2,000 RPMs and run 75 miles an hour.
Right.
You
right.
know?
Yeah,
so around town, I'm 1,000, 1,200, 1,400 RPMs,
mm-hmm.
maybe 15 at the most, and that's before it gets into an overdrive.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so they last.
Mm-hmm. They hold up a lot better. They're keeping the RPMs down on the motor, so they're not burning as much fuel. You know, they're
that
doing
goes
it all
back to transmissions too.
Going back into the transmissions and rear ends.
Six speeds. You know, I'm you know get four speed, man. It's over my head. You know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Unless you got a Lenco or something like that. But but you know, then we're going to six speeds. We're going to seven speeds. We got eight speeds. You know.
Right.
And
right.
I guess they've got some more than that.
Oh yeah, I mean we have some 10-speed trucks. You know, that have
10-speed
automatics.
Well, now those have the smaller motors and turbos. Do we see it in that rather than a big motor?
Some of those are 10-speeds, but we also have, like some of our 6.2-liter trucks, you know, they have 10-speeds in them.
Big old motor still got 10-speed.
Yeah, still got 10-speed. Pretty tough transmission. We've had very few fail. We had to go in one the other day. It's actually a gear-driven fluid pump for the transmission. where most transmissions have a pump driven in the center of the transmission off of the torque converter. This one actually has a gear drive assembly that drops it down, and the pump is actually submerged in the fluid, which is actually a pretty good idea.
It is great. Yeah. That keeps it, that cools everything.
Yep.
We don't have the fatigue factor.
Exactly. But it's actually, we actually had one of the gear drive, one of the pulleys acted up on it.
Yeah.
It didn't hold up the bearing. It's a pressed on bearing and it lost its tension, and it let the pulley move a little bit, but that's really the only one we've been in. Yeah, it's they're pretty tough transmissions so far.
Are they doing that with clutches, or are they doing that with these pulleys that open and close?
No, these are clutches.
These are clutches. Now, the ones that are doing the
it's called a CVT transmission. It doesn't have gears in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all
belt driven.
Chain and a chain belt, what do you call it? It's a metal belt, basically, and two variable pulleys that will kind of change size as the RPMs change.
Metal against metal?
It's metal against metal, and it, trust me, it's on there, it's in there tight.
You better run whatever transmission fluid they recommend.
You better run the right fluid in it.
Right.
You do not pour anything in there that you don't know what you're pouring in. So, but it's the...
Just every kind of transmission fluid wouldn't work in there. That'd puke that transmission in a heartbeat.
Well, you know, it if it's a little too slick, it will kill that chain and pulleys. Yeah, because as soon as it starts slipping on there, it'll eat them up.
Mm-mm.
You know, but they tend to work. Yeah, you know, they do a decent job. Can't talk real bad about them.
No. Nope.
Yeah,
it's got a funny shift to it.
Well, and it really never shifts, but it just – some of them actually program a shift feel into them.
Right. You can tell when it's – you can tell, though, when it's moving from a ratio to another ratio.
Yeah.
It's not – you know
– Well, and it's – it and like I say, it's kind of strange because if you just mat the gas, it'll depending on how far you push down on the gas – depends on how many RPMs it lets it turn, but it doesn't really, that's not in direct relation to how fast you're going, because it's giving you a little more power because it's giving you more RPM.
Okay.
And then it changes the ratio to change your speed.
So, okay.
Kind of weird, but anyway,
it works.
It works.
It works dang good too, man.
Yep. So we're going to take a break, let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back. Son, he drove low. When his engine roared, they called the highway thunder road. Sometimes into Asheville, sometimes Memphis town. The revenueers chased him, but they couldn't run him down. Each time they thought they had him, his engine would explode. He'd go by like they were standing still on Thunder Road.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. We kind of went down the path of transmissions there before we went to break, and... we've been working on one that's an interesting deal, and we're not quite done with it yet. But it's one of the 21 model Corvettes.
Woo!
Got a, and I don't remember how many gears it's got in. I think it's 8 or 9 speed. But the it is a internal dual clutch standard shift that does not use a clutch pedal. It you drive it like an automatic. But you got to pay attention to know that it is a standard shift.
Really?
Because you come up to a stop and it just, you kind of notice that the motor kind of relaxes and it's not in gear engaged anymore. Okay. And then as soon as you touch the gas, you feel it release the clutch and start going. Yeah. But to most people it's a kind of a seamless deal. You never know it was standard shift. You know, the first BMW had it years ago when I was over there, and I drove a couple of them before I realized it was actually a standard shift transmission. Yeah. Had the same looking shifter, everything on it. Just, yeah. No clutch pedal, no nothing. But it's the clutch is all handled inside the transmission. Has two clutches. So it's able to do its shifting seamlessly because, you know, instead of like a regular standard shift transmission, it uses a single clutch where you have to disengage that clutch, manually move it to the next gear, and then release the clutch again. This one actually, when you put it in drive, it engages first and second gear. It disengages both of those clutches. And when you go to take off, it engages the low gear clutch. And then when it's time to shift, it releases that one and engages the other one.
Does it do it with solenoids or what?
Well, it does it with solenoids and controls in the transmission and transmission and control computer. Module. It's all computer controlled.
Oh, my Lord.
So, and then once it goes to second gear, it goes ahead and shifts the other rail into third.
Mm-mm-mm.
And then when it's ready for third gear, it's just a seamless thing. It runs all the way through the gears. Yeah. You know, the only stumbling block to me is if you're kind of cruising along, you're kind of letting it run through its normal gears and you stab at it and it has to go from sixth gear to decide whether it's going to second, third, you know, whichever gear it's going to, then it's got to shift to that gear and then go again. But it's so seamless you really don't notice it. You know, it's really a neat.
Well, you know, without computers, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing with our cars.
No, computers. You know, I don't know. They'll be the death of me before it's over with. It's,
the car doctor is putting them down.
Yeah, it's. They've changed. What we used to could do with some of the computers.
Right.
You could go in and you could pick some programming and put in, or you could go in and you could make something happen sometimes where, and that's kind of where we're at on this Corvette, is we need to make it program. And we've been working on this car since Thursday trying to get it, just to get it to program.
Well, okay. Now.
And involving General Motors and their technical guys and their engineers and everybody else, and even letting them take control of the computer and try and do it themselves. And
so, well, when you were at Beamer and the experience I've had over there with them,
mm-hmm.
y'all had a computerized deal where you actually programmed
mm-hmm.
all that stuff by internet.
Well, and that's the way they are now, and you know. BMW was a little bit ahead of their time on a lot of that stuff. And sometimes they would bring pieces to the market or, you know, a little before they should.
A little bit too quick, yeah.
I know the 2002 7 Series BMW was one of the first, push-to-start cars.
Okay, right.
You know, you kind of stuck the remote in a little slot in the dash, and you pushed the button, and it cranked the car. Well, you'd have to program something on it, and these cars had 50 modules on them. Yeah, it had a bunch of modules in it, and you could not pick. I want to program this module, and just go in, do that module, and get
That's
out.
That's what I understood. You had to do the whole circuit.
It had to scan the whole car, and if anything needed updating, it had to update everything. Okay, it had to update whatever modules needed updating before it let you finish. Okay. But if a window switch or the amp was a key killer of this stuff, if any module in there had an issue and wouldn't program, it failed the programming and would not complete it. And you'd be sitting there, card be on, key'd be in the dash, doing your thing, you're getting it programmed, it'd fail, and it'd shut the car off and spit the key out and lay it in the floorboard.
Huh?
Yeah. And you spend about 3 or 4 days trying to get everything up and going again. Yeah. It
didn't indicate where the problem was at?
No, you had to go back and figure out where it failed. And then you'd
That's
have to
kind
fix
of tough
that
when you
problem.
You got a damn computer and the computer's the one that did it.
Right. then you gotta stop and you gotta fix the problem, you know. if you wanted your car to run again, the stereo had to work or whatever had to work, yeah, because it had to be able to program that module or that amp or whichever, whatever piece before it would let you go and buy it, you know. Luckily, General Motors was not like that and still is not like that to where you have to program everything. I can go in and I can pick transmission control or engine control or, you know, AC or whichever module I want to program, and I can program that module. The problem we have right now with this particular car is at one time I was able to go in, and if it had the latest and greatest programming in it, I could tell it to go ahead and program it again, you know, just to update things. Okay. It's not changing any of the programming parameters, nothing. But say these all have what they call environmental signals that they send out. Basically, they're sending out the VIN number to another module saying, okay, this is the car I'm supposed to be attached to. Does this match your VIN number? Okay. If you had to change something or you put a new module in and say it, for some reason, already had the latest and greatest programming, or it failed during a programming event and didn't finish the security part of it, you could go in there and make it do it again and make it go on through. This one, you can't do that anymore. They've taken that away from us. Yeah. I don't have the option to tell it, okay, I know it's got the right stuff in it, but go ahead and do it again so it'll relearn some of the other stuff. And that's where we're stuck. It's like, no, we got rules. We can't let y'all do that. It's like, but it will fix the car, and I'm not changing anything.
Right.
So
why
can't we do this?
Why can't we do that? You know?
Then you got to get, you know.
They're pulling that authority away from you, though. But undoubtedly, somewhere back in there, some of these young gurus that are computer nerds have been trying to program that computers to get more horsepower or RPMs or torque or something.
Well,
and it's messed up the computers, you know, and they're trying to take that ability away from you to do that.
Yeah, and I understand that, you know, but it's, you know, when on our end of it, they don't pay us to sit there for 3 days and try and program on this car, you know, won't do it. Ain't going to happen, you know. I'll argue that point with our rep.
Have they got
with
a plane that they can catch and come down here and fix the damn
right.
car?
You know, I wish they would at times, but it's
it'd be nice if they're on the side. Y'all can get the lawsuit from the customer of the car.
I'll buy the plane ticket if they'll send the engineer that designed
send him down here, and I'm going to look over his shoulder when he works on it.
That ain't what I'm going to be doing if I can get a hold to him. But it's
wait till he gets the car fixed anyway.
Right,
and then put some bumps on him.
Yeah, you got. You know, it's hard enough to deal with one engineer and try and convince him that something they did isn't quite right.
Oh, no. Okay? They don't make mistakes.
Right, exactly. But to get a group of engineers in the same room trying to work on the same problem and agree on something the same way, that takes an act of Congress.
Right.
Okay. So it makes it difficult on our end. And I really worry about what who we're going to have working on these cars down the road.
Right.
Because, you know, the guys that you normally had as technicians 30 years ago, you know, I've had some very good technicians that could fix cars and did a good job that could barely read.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They weren't the top students.
Kevin, they had a gift.
They had a God-given talent.
Right, a talent that they were given because they didn't have all of this other sophisticated education.
Right. So, I mean, it's...
I've had those guys work for me, too.
Yeah. I mean, I've had
I loved them. They did a beautiful job.
Had some very, very talented technicians that didn't have any school, you know. Behind them, you know, some of them, you know, never even made it to high school.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And hey, made a good living.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Supported their family, did what they were supposed to do, fixed cars.
Right.
You know, ain't nothing.
Hey, that's
very proud of.
That's all about veterans, baby. That's what they did.
Yeah.
They did what they were told to do, and it wouldn't make a difference what kind of education you had.
Right. But that's not the technicians we're going to have. Yeah.
No, not now.
It's going to be, you're going to have people that can sit down with a computer and figure this stuff out. Not that they're going to let you get in there and build programs, you know, because that's not going to happen.
Nope.
But you've got to be able to get in there and work with that computer and find the problem and know which direction to go look for and know how to chase the wires and know how to look for short and know how to look for connection issues. Mm-hmm. You know, they're making our terminals now. We have some that are 50 thousandths or smaller.
Really?
You know, and even smaller than that, you know, they're not carrying much current, but you get that small of a connector, it doesn't take much to get a bad connection.
Right.
Yeah. So, any kind of corrosion.
That, without that juice going through that connector, mm-hmm. all that stuff doesn't work right.
Right.
It don't take
right.
but one of them.
All it takes is one poor connection.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I went with engineer last Friday, and that's all we did was check connections on one that I was having issues
Woo.
With. So, but anyway, it's time for us to take a break, and we'll come back after these messages.
And the waitress, she brought me some coffee. I thanked her and I called her back again. I said, that old song sure does fit me. Cause, darling, I'm a truck-driving man. Pour me another cup of coffee.
It's the Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The Doctor is in.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. Any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. But, you know, we're talking about, all the electrical. Looks like we do have a caller online. Caller, are you with us? Hello? Caller, are you with us?
Hello?
Hey, there you are. All right, what can we do for you tonight?
I just wanted to ask Kevin a question about a diesel.
Okay, go ahead.
If you got a diesel that needed to be repaired on the DEF fluid, and they said it was more to fix it the right way or take the DEF off, what would you do?
Couple questions. Is it still under any kind of powertrain warranty?
Nope.
So it's out of warranty. Are you going to ever go to an emissions state?
Hope not, but sure, one day we'd trade it in.
Yeah.
On a new vehicle.
Yeah. Well, and that would be someone else's problem down the road. But, if it was me and I needed to do the DEF system usually is not to the point where it's cheaper to repair the DEF system versus the doing the whole delete. Because those delete systems actually get kind of expensive too. But say if you have a particulate filter that's bad and maybe you have a DEF heater with it or something, the particulate filter in the exhaust, you can be $8,000 just in that one part, okay?
Right.
So if I have one that is going to be here in Alabama, so they're not doing an emissions test, it's out of powertrain warranty, so I don't, something goes wrong with the motor, I'm having to come out of pocket because I changed this. I'd be okay with doing a delete on it. They make more power, better
right,
fuel economy.
Right.
They smoke more. They're all the above. But it's
he ain't gonna be the only one smoking.
No, I mean it.
But would it hurt your trade-in value once you? I mean, would it be any question when you got ready to trade it in when you had to say that you had messed with emissions?
Well, most places are not going to ask, especially when you get to that point,
right,
in the life of the vehicle. But it's, yes, if they know and they plan on putting it back in stock form, it could. But most of those trucks that, you know, if it's out of any kind of powertrain, you're well over 100,000 miles, and most of those are sold, you know, to wholesalers.
They're wholesalers.
Or through auctions.
They don't, they're not going to put
it on people,
a dealer.
And those people, they don't typically care.
Right. They're not going to put it on a dealer lot. So.
Right. So, so it doesn't change that a whole lot. I'm just a little skittish on doing that change, because if you ever job situation changes and you have to move to Texas is an emission state, you got to go to Texas. Well, guess what? When you get there and it has to pass an emissions test, you've got to spend all that money to put it all back in stock form. And at that point, you're replacing everything. You know, it costs you $15,000, $20,000.
That's when you trade trucks before you go to Texas.
Yeah.
That's a good reason to stay in Alabama.
There you go.
Don't you know it, brother?
Yep.
Appreciate your call, though, buddy.
No question. I appreciate it, guys.
All right. I appreciate you. But, and that's a very good point, and people ask it all the time, you know. As far as me being upset because somebody might change a redo the system where it doesn't have all the emission stuff on it, you're not hurting my feelings, okay? But you got to understand that you voided all your powertrain warranty,
right? Right.
Okay.
In essence, you're breaking a law.
Yeah. Well, and you are. I mean, because you are deleting the, you know, federally mandated emission systems on the vehicle, so yeah, you are technically you're doing something illegal.
You know how I feel about that. I know we're on the air. We're on a public broadcasting system, and we shouldn't be advising anybody to break any federal laws.
Right.
But you know that gentleman owns his own vehicle, and he makes those calls himself.
Yeah.
And we can't tell him to do it.
Right.
I'll only tell him what I would do if it was mine.
Right. You know, and stuff like the particulate filter, if you stay on top of the other systems on that emission system, I've seen these trucks go 300,000-400,000 miles.
Sure.
And not have to replace a particulate filter or even have it cleaned.
Can you clean them?
The particulate filter, you can have them cleaned. There's specific companies that do it, but it's, it is a feasible deal. It's definitely cheaper than replacing for sure.
Okay. Do we have somebody like that locally?
Don't hold me to the fire, because it's usually more of a big truck deal.
Okay.
Over the road trucks are typically the ones that go that route.
Okay.
But it can be done on the smaller ones. Same principle. If you keep up with if the check engine light on your diesel comes on, get it fixed.
Right.
Get it fixed right then. Don't wait, because it's most of the time if you have a problem with your diesel emission system, it's going to derate you to the point to where you got to go get it fixed. Because you're going to get tired of riding around at 4 miles an hour.
Yeah. Don't they have a year and date on these motors and these big trucks like that? Or I don't know where that. If I don't think we know, but maybe if somebody out there is listening knows, you can call us. But isn't this kind of like the electronic logs? There's a certain date on there that you can do that you don't need it before that, and indeed, the date after that you need it.
Well, yeah. It's now on like our General Motors vehicles. 07 was the last year that they didn't have any kind of really invasive emission systems on the vehicles. When they went to 08, everything started getting particulate filters and DEF systems and that kind of stuff on them. That's why the 07 and earlier trucks are pretty sought after, you know, because they don't have to have all that stuff.
Okay. I thought there was a date somewhere on that.
Yeah. But, you know, those trucks are getting old enough. If somebody wants a newer truck with all the bells and whistles, they've got to deal with the emission system.
Right.
You know, nothing wrong with an 07 truck. My brother had one he sold recently and got a good penny for it because it was an 07. Way more than I thought he was going to get, but it was in good shape. He kept it up, and it had the Duramax and Allison in it, and, you know, kind of a bulletproof, you know, drivetrain system in them. And he got 20 grand for it.
Woo!
And it's a, woo! You know, it was an older truck, you know, but,
awesome.
Yeah, that's a lot of money for an 07 model truck.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But, anyway, he, I don't know. It's getting to the point to where, they're just getting way more technical. We're having trouble keeping up with some of the electronics, and our technicians are going to have to step up to the plate.
Oh yeah,
and it's everybody's. I mean, it's the manufacturers have gone down the wrong road in how they've taught some of the technicians, and I think they've created an environment to where the guys that can think and could think and think on their own a little bit to diagnose stuff, they've been taught not to. And they've got to change that mentality
right.
if they're gonna make it happen. But anyway, sound like we've run up to the end of our show, and I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doctor Show. This is the Car Doctor, Kevin Ramkin, and I will see you next week.
And this is Tom Claxton, and to all of our veterans and first responders out there, hoorah!